My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. It's Friday, new episode day. I'm a little under the weather recording this. Catching a little flu bug going around, so my voice may sound a little more nasally. Sorry for that, but the conversation was still good. We have Jason Dvorak returning to the show from PlayStation Library and Game Rave TV. It's been a couple weeks since I had him on the show, or even months, so it was nice to have him back on. We hear his console story, so this is a question I like to ask. It's more of a personal history and kind of recapping just like your own nostalgia for that favorite platform or console of yours. And we get to hear Jason's. So I hope you all enjoy the conversation we had. Business up front, I'm getting ready to release the digital edition of Retro Game Zine Issue 3, the Final Fantasy XI issue. This will be on patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. You can go to my Patreon page and see the digital store there to buy digital copies. Physical copies will be on pixelsandpolygons.net, where you can physically buy all my books and stuff later in the month. I'm waiting to get those from the printer, but I'm going to ship out all of the copies for the Kickstarter backers first before I have anything posted for sale there. I want to make sure that the folks who kind of supported it initially and right out of the gate get their copies first. But that should be available for everybody, like I said, a little later in the month. Then issue 4 is already done as well. That was part of the same Kickstarter, so that'll be out on April. And I'm preliminarily kind of laying out and planning the next batch of issues. It's going to do a chunk of 3 when I do the next Kickstarter for this, but that gives me more turnaround time to production, putting all together, promoting it, and then releasing, shipping, and printing it and everything, and not, you know, kind of button up against each other. But yes, that is the Retro Game Zine update. The 32-bit Library Volume 5, still cranking away on that and having a good time. I've got another idea. I've been looking out for folks. If you are listening to this and you are somebody who's in the games industry, I've been trying to put together a project. Just kind of like thinking about the individuals and the human beings involved when a video game is canceled. Like if you're, you know, deep in development and you've invested a lot of personal time, effort, energy, creativity, and the project gets canceled, you know, how you respond to that, you know, what impact that has on you and what that does even for your own personal creativity, whether that's like, you know, outside of the work and into what you do on your own time, or how long it takes you to kind of get back motivated to be being your best self and creating again and moving on to the next project. But yeah, it was the idea to kind of stem from the conversation I was having around, you know, my own book, the Beat 'em Up, you know, being kind of shelved and, you know, not really sure what to do. It, you know, made me think about all the effort and time and work I put into it and potentially not being released. Like, it was quite a devastating kind of bummer to think about it maybe not happening at all, period. And, you know, that's just me as one person doing that over about 7-8 months of time. There's developers who work in, you know, at studios with whole teams investing years into projects that sometimes will be canceled. And I can only imagine the scale and scope of that, like, you know, how that must impact, you know, that drive and everything. So yeah, if you would like to maybe chat, I have some information that or have some questions and some more info I can email and connect with you on. If this sounds like something, again, if you're working in the game industry and this is something that maybe has impacted you and you'd like to chat with me, reach out to me. You can find my email and everything in the show notes and reach out to me on social media and I can send you some info. But that's going to be a kind of a back burner project that I'm working on, maybe into its own book and everything down the road. But something outside of like the 32-bit library, retro game zine type of thing. So working on something potentially new and different there with that. Otherwise, yeah, same old, having fun, working on the projects that I'm doing. And I should be in as a guest on an upcoming Flashback 64 episode for a fun game. Actually, it was a double game header in an episode this month. So if you have not been listening to that show, it's a great podcast for Nintendo 64 fans, but they do a lot of fun stuff in their off weeks between their major episodes. For just similarly to like the nostalgia vibes you can kind of get from this. So shout out to Flashback 64. Give them a listen. Find them on your favorite podcast platform. Whenever you're listening this to, what's the sentence there? I don't have a red underline here to tell me what to do. Listen to that show. Otherwise, that's all I've got for you. Thank you so much for coming back again another week. If you like what you hear, rate and review it and do whatever you can. I don't normally ask for that, but why not? It helps. It does something. Somewhere, something is happening that, you know, that's reflected on. So I'd appreciate that. And enjoy the show. I will see you next week for a special episode, a little anniversary bonus for y'all. So look forward to that. Bye. Welcome to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke. I am the host of the show, and I am making this introduction way longer than it ever has been or needs to be. I have a returning guest. It's been a number of weeks, actually, since we've had Jason on the show, but from PlayStation Library and Game Rave TV, Jason Dvorak is on the show. So welcome back, Jason. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for having me again. This is always a good time. I love being put in the hot seat.
Yeah. It is hot seat-ish, I guess, with the icebreakers and this or that things and all that stuff. But, you know, I hope that the questions at least give you some time to think about, you know, but neither here nor there. Jason is off camera or before we started, he wanted to go in unknowing of which questions we were doing. So I did just throw them out there to him, you know, just moments ago, which questions we'll record for our episodes right now. But I think that's the most, you know, craziest thing, you know, to not even like come in with any pre-thought about it too. That's bold.
Yeah.
But it's been, it's like I said, it's been a while. How about you catch us up? How's the site going? How's your, you know, any cool new like variant discoveries? But how's life over in your land?
It is pretty crazy. As far as the site goes, we are now averaging 300,000 Google impressions a month, which is insane. And if you were to believe my Google Analytics, it's all people looking for demo discs and information on demos, which makes me sad because I could remove literally 80% of my website and no one would care. As far as actual like variant hunting and things go, there's actually been a couple of crazy things. One is I just did an episode on a copy of Braindead 13 Long Box that has a sticker on the back that says it was free with a PlayStation console. But we right now, the only two leads we have of it being with a console is that a Saturn copy on eBay, which is unfortunately long gone, so we couldn't look at the actual auction, was listed as a pack-in copy, but then Readysoft also had an actual contest where they gave away a copy of the game and the PlayStation itself. Hmm. So we're trying to fit, and by we, I mean me and my Discord peeps, we're trying to figure out, like, was it a pack-in? Was it a store exclusive? Did we completely miss something? Because every person I talk to about it being a pack-in, they're like, what are you talking about? It was never a pack-in. I actually reached out to a member of Readysoft yesterday through their current company, which I'm sure was just a brilliant, not stalkery thing to do. So we'll see if they answered that back. Other than that, since announcing that I'm getting into Japanese games, my current addiction to the point where I might need therapy after it's all said and done is a Japanese game called Six Seed, Legend of Plasma Light. Where it has four real-world robot models, except they each have four interchangeable parts. So there's 256 possible robots you can make that once you build and plug into the PlayStation, they'll actually appear in game as what you built. And I am currently photographing and documenting and photoshopping all 256 variants.
Oh boy. Yeah. That's
yeah.
Work.
It's fun though. Like just posing them and trying to come up with new ideas. And then there's a whole like two or three separate things about that I won't get into here that are like, it's gotten to the point where like, I actually might write a book about it and I might steal things from you as far as design ideas and stuff. So,
I'd love to help. I mean, any questions or any support I can offer, I'll gladly, you know, reciprocate your way. You've been, in every single 32-bit library volume so far, and it's just been fun getting to know you and being able to kind of work together. So, I look forward to that then. Yeah, anything you need from me, I'm on board. I'll support, help, and do whatever I need to do to help you out. So excellent. That sounds cool. That sounds like an early Toys to Life type of thing too. I mean,
pretty much.
What was that game, Starlink? It was like, you know, Wii U era and all that stuff. Yep. And like they had that Star Fox, you know, even info there, but you could kind of customize that. I think that was supposed to alter in game which weapons and stuff you had in your ship, or maybe it was just purely cosmetic. I'm not sure. But I always like the idea of things like that, but I never invested in those at all. Like in a garage sale, we got a whole bunch of amiibos one time, but like I never like personally got into them, nor did I get a lot of games that used them at all. But, you know, we have this bin in our closet right now with about, you know, 36 amiibos of just various Nintendo properties.
Yeah, so unless you're displaying them as like cool little statues, that's pretty much what everyone's doing with them right now.
All right, let's get into the swing of things here. We're going to start off with, we'll do a couple this or that's, and then we'll do an icebreaker. So these this or that's are exactly that. I'm going to give you two choices. You got to pick one. You can't not pick one. You have to pick one.
Okay.
Monster Rancher or Monster Hunter?
Oh, Rancher, easily.
Okay. Cartridge or CD?
We'll say CD.
CD, yeah. Why? So why is that? Just because the storage size, you have to just...
The ability to have real arranged soundtracks on it, the ability to swap discs for that like extra little progression feel, and three, you can at least resurface a disc. You know, if a cartridge goes bad, it's pretty much bad, especially if like you chip the motherboard or something.
Yeah, it's true. Let's do Samus or Master Chief.
Samus. Yeah, Samus. Okay. Once Master Chief can roll into a ball, we'll come back to this.
Run and gun or beat 'em up?
Oh, I would say beat 'em up, especially if it were like Streets of Rage or Final Fight or I can't think of that other game name. Turtles in Time. There's just something about walking along and punching people in the face for an hour that is just very stress relaxing.
Okay, last one then. Pixels or polygons?
Pixels for life.
Okay. Those are some fun ones. I used to do a whole episode on just this or that, and I did it a couple times with a couple different guests and everything, but I realized, like, you know, unless somebody's picking to do that episode, I haven't been able to ask these things. So, you know, now new format, we'll start off every episode with a couple this or that's, and as I think of more, I've got a little master doc going here. Let's warm, we're warmed up now. Let's do an icebreaker before we get into the main question then. Let's find out. What game did you wrongly judge by its cover or title?
Honestly, that would probably be the Zixi Legend of Plasma Light. The problem is with the game, I only knew of it through... side tangent. I knew of it 20 years ago when it first hit the shelves, and I was like, holy cow, I can't afford $200. But in recent years... Before I actually got into the Japanese collecting, I had watched one or two other YouTubers, one of them famous, and both came at it as if it were just a gimmick game. Like, they hook up the robots, they played it for like 10 minutes, and they're like, oh, all right, LOL, this is done, we're good to go. And that was the end of it. And then when I finally got it and I sat down to realize, okay, I want to map everything out wise, it was almost like a revelation. Like, there's this incredible meta going on with the entire process of the game that unless you were there from the beginning, you don't get an appreciate. And by what I mean by that is when you first open this giant box, I mean, it's like, it's huge. It looks like it's like a piece of luggage. The instruction sheet for building the robots tells you to specifically build the robots in a certain order. And you're like, okay, whatever. So you start following them. And then you realize what it's doing is you're building the robots from the easiest model kit to the most difficult model kit. And number four was just absolutely a pain in the ass. But then once you appreciate that and you get into the game, when you realize what all the characters' movesets are, you realize that it's also going from the easiest to learn robot to the hardest to learn robot. And from there, you're just like, okay, well, wait, that's crazy. Like, all right, cool. And then when you get into that, you realize that there are eight pilots that have no names, and you can just pick one, name it, and dump it in the thing. Each pilot has a different reaction to each piece from each robot. So, like, if I'm using pilot A with this robot, his damage or taking in damage might be different if I used it with this pilot. So there's this whole, like, sub-level of, like, trying to figure out which pieces are the best with which pilots to use, and everyone seems to gloss over that. So that's one of the cool things I'm doing with the game is I'm actually mapping out all the damages and so forth to try and basically make a strategy guide for a game maybe three other people will play after I'm done with everything.
That's crazy. Yeah, I think this just sounds like a bit of an underappreciated, you know, like details and efforts there then if you judge it by its cover. But that's cool. Yeah, I want to look more into that game. I think personally, I'll do some Googling afterwards and kind of mess around with it. But I like the work that you're doing there. I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah.
But let's get into the main topic then.
All right.
Again, you being the PlayStation library, not a, but the PlayStation library, I want to hear your console story. So I guess I'm putting you on the spot, you know, expecting you that to maybe pick the PlayStation here as the answer to this, but you could surprise me with anything theoretically. But I'd love to hear one of your console stories. So that is like, you know, when did you get it? You know, what are some of the games you had? What were some of those like early memories with it? But then kind of thinking back about just the system in general, like what are some really special moments you had? But this is just kind of a more personal question, a more personal episode, just to hear about the impact and, you know, the memories of a specific console you have from your past. So I'd love to hear about which console that is and kind of go from there.
I would say, to be honest, if I were to choose three of them, the first one would be PlayStation 1. I got it in, I want to say, January of 1996. I was actually almost out of video games at that point. What I mean by that is I had literally sold off my Super Nintendo, my Genesis, etc. There's a whole sub story there that we won't get into. And because I had kept just my TurboGrafx for a reason we'll get to in another episode, I was like, okay, well, like if I'm missing something on this, what am I missing out? And the Jaguar came and the 3DO came and the PCFX came. And it was just like, it was just all like, it was too expensive. Nothing was getting my attention. And then Sega released the Saturn and I was like, okay, it's kind of cool, but like, there's still nothing I really want to play. And then Street Fighter Alpha came out in the arcade and I really, really wanted to play that. And I found out it was coming to the consoles and I was like, okay, do I want a Saturn? Do I want a PlayStation? And I hadn't really thought much about it, and we ended up going to a Japanese anime monthly meetup, and there was a gentleman there who always bought the newest Japanese imports. It didn't matter what it was, how much it cost, he bought it and he had it. And we walked in that weekend, and he had a Japanese PlayStation playing Ridge Racer, and within 10 seconds of watching Ridge Racer, I was like, well, I guess I'm getting a PlayStation now. And I started saving up for it, and the next meeting was by the time the next meeting came around, I had the PlayStation, which I specifically bought for Street Fighter Alpha, except when I went into the store to buy it with Alpha on Alpha's launch day, Alpha had gotten delayed by a week. So I was like, oh, So I just bought this PlayStation and my memory card, and I went home and I played the demo disc for a week straight, and I became really, really good at the first level of Wipeout. And then next week I got Alpha, and it was just like, oh my God, everything's amazing. I literally played it, I think, for like 48, like I think I said like 24 hours. It's in the one book, the Capcom book. Like, I could not get it out of my brain. And then, having already solidified that, yes, I have the PlayStation now, I'm good to go. Like, 2 months later at the anime meetup, we walk in and he is playing the demo of Final Fantasy from Tobal. And he just cast Leviathan. I was like, yep, it's in. We're good. This is my system for the rest of my life. We're good to go. What was funny about having the PlayStation in the early days was I was a poor college student, and I spent all my money on just the system and Street Fighter Alpha. And I can actually blame my mom for my love of exploring things I haven't tried before, because out of nowhere, she came home one day, I think it was for a Valentine's Day gift or whatever, because she felt bad that my parents were getting divorced. And she goes, Jason, I got this as a Valentine's Day gift for you. And I took the package, and it was a copy of Space Griffin VF9 and NBA Jam Tournament Edition. And when you have two of the greatest arcade games and one of the greatest B-quality dungeon crawlers with essentially a Valkyrie car, you're home. And I played the snot out of those three games for a good, like, 6 months before I could afford another game. But yeah, like, it's that... Space Griffin VF9 especially, like, cemented the whole, like, let me explore, let me check things I've never tried before. And there are so many categories on genre categories that I literally never played until the PlayStation, that made me just appreciate the system so much more.
Yeah. You also wrote the entry on Space Griffin in, Volume 4. So you've been, we've mentioned a couple times already, but yeah, you have your own original articles in each of the four volumes of my 32-bit library books, but then you've also written about a couple of the games inside each. But yeah, the Space Griffin article was rad. And reading it, I'm not playing all of these games when I'm making these books, like, for dozens and dozens of hours each or anything. You know, like, I'm trying to capture some screenshots of some key moments using some save states and some save like from game facts and all that stuff, getting some save files as well to help find some, like, key spots. But with Space Griffin, just reading it and all that stuff, like, I never gave that game the time of day or anything in the past. Like, I didn't even know what kind of game it was. But yeah, that methodical kind of, like, dungeon crawling of it all. And like, it does have that kind of, like, a creepy, like, tone to it, being on, like, this on the space station that you're in and everything. I definitely spent more time on that game than I was anticipating. And probably, like, 2 or 3 hours later, I'm like, I didn't need any, like, save data. I didn't need any downloaded, like, saves or anything like that at all for it, because I was just playing enough along into the game to, like, capture enough of, like, the vibe and everything. But yeah, it's an interesting early PlayStation game for sure. It is not, you know, perfect by any means. I mean, there's some warts and all to it, but... But I think for that early PlayStation era and the early PlayStation moments, like, to really have, like, a 3D game, a game that made you feel like you were immersed and exploring, and to have it be, you know, not 2D still images or not advancing a screen or anything, but to physically be able to move around and all stuff. It was really rad to kind of see that happening, you know, in 96 and everything. So that's a fun one. When did you start getting, like, in your collection, you have a full complete set of all of the PlayStation games. When did that collection bug? Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So that's a dumb story. So in around the 2000, 2001 era, I was working at Interact Accessories and Game Shark in Maryland. And at the time, you were the cool kid if you had a full Nintendo set. Insert arguments about stadium events. And at the time, and I know this will be hard for a lot of current people to hear, but at that time in 2000, there was no such thing as a hidden gem. There was no such thing as YouTubers and so forth. So you could walk into a Funko Land and literally half the library of any system was 50 cents to a dollar. There was one Funko Land / GameStop a bit from my apartment that I bought so many games one day, they had to use a garbage bag to contain everything because their shopping bags weren't big enough. And they didn't want to waste bags, bagging everything. And I came back 2 months later with my roommate, and we walked in, and the manager of the store looked over, saw me, and started laughing his ass off. And my roommate was like, "What's so funny?" And he goes, "The guy you walked in with, he's the only person that has ever made me gotten a pallet of restock."
Oh, you made a bunch of work for him. Yeah, they had to restock, you know, dude, get more inventory back in, and somebody had to process all of that. Oh, they loved you.
Oh, dude, like literally, like I would literally just walk in, and then at the time I didn't care about boxes or manuals, like as long as I had the cartridge, which made your question earlier make me wince. I would literally just go up to the dump bin and just scoop up a stack of games and bring them, be like, "Here, I'll take these." And they would just ring them up 50 cents at a time, hand them a $50 bill, and you walk home with like a fourth of the library already. It was just so cool. But to explain, going back to the PlayStation, so I was in the middle of doing a full NES set, and I was walking out of my apartment one day to work, and my brain went, you know, you have a lot of competition for NES carts. And like, that's when eBay started coming around and people were like, "Okay, we'll start scooping up these games this way." And I was like, "All right, I really don't want to pay $100 for a $10 game. Like, what am I going to do?" And I was like, "Well, I have a PlayStation. It's pretty cool. It'd be really, really stupid to collect for PlayStation. There shouldn't be anyone doing it right now. Let's have at it." And I ended up going to work that day and went to the mall afterwards. And the first two games I bought for what would then be my full set collection of PlayStation was, I believe, Elemental Gearbolt. It was Elemental Gearbolt for sure. And then I think it was another light gun game. It might have been Area 51. And from there, I just started buying nothing but PlayStation games. And eventually it became like a complete set, like because I had started then, it got to a point in late 2004, where I was still working at EB Games/GameStop. I would just put down $5 on every pre-order we had just to make sure we'd actually get at least one copy of the game in. And it got so bad, my district manager called one day and he goes, "Question for you." I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, Did you pre-order Cat in the Hat for the PlayStation?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I'm going for a complete set." And he starts laughing. He goes, "I was looking at the pre-order sheets. In the entire company, there is one pre-order for that game."
Oh,
and
my gosh.
It was you.
That's crazy.
And that's how it came. And then Game Rave was spawned just from me and the person, my friend Steve, who got me into the variant hunting. Originally was to track variants, and at the time I was naive. I was like, "Oh, there's like maybe a different Dragon Ball, there's maybe this, oh, well, you'll do the work in designs." And then from there it slowly morphed into this, "Well, I'm going to be the one dumb enough to just write this down." Mm-hmm. And that's how PlayStation Library came, and how my full set came, and how all the variants came.
Yeah, crazy. That's a cool story. Yeah, the I remember those early days of pre-ordering, you know. I mean, I was a Funko Land regular when I was a kid. Every time I'd visit my grandma, and we lived in you know, Southern California and all that stuff, popping into this Funko Land, they'd have their little, you know, newsprint like price sheet. You know, you'd be able to take it. It was a couple pages. Yeah, I wish I just still had one or two of them, just to like, you know, just to have them for nostalgia reasons. But you know, they'd list just all the games, what they'd buy them for, what they'd sell them for. And like, it was just like, even if I wasn't able to buy a game at that time, taking that home, cataloging my games, seeing how much they're worth, and then like highlighting games, like, okay, well, if I brought all these in, I could get this, and then, or maybe I could save up this and buy this. And it was just like, for a young me to like be able to like kind of price chart that all out in my mind, like, it was just kind of cool to always like be thinking about games. And then eventually that would, you know, that Funko Land became a GameStop and everything. But the pre-order process too, I remember they used to just print out those receipts, you know, with like the credit on there, and just put them in their little like, there's a little, this the shop I always went to had like a little green filing thing. And at the time it seemed fine, but then eventually I went to work there when I was a young adult as well, late teen, young adult. And Yeah, it wouldn't be difficult to potentially lose some of those credits and things like that. And when that would happen, that's like people's money and everything right there on the spot. And like, it seemed for a technology company to have a system like that, where it's just like, hey, we'll try and alphabetize this by the games in this shoebox here, and this will tell us, you know, whose game is what, you know, and everything. And it's like a broken system.
I still remember my first day at EB Games. They're like, yeah, here's our 3 carbon paper for trade-ins. And I was like, why can't you just put on the receipt? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. So then with the system then, so those are some, early memories you had with it. Once you did start getting into the actual collecting of it all, like, is there like what were some of those like special like grail moments? What were some ones that like you really know that you wanted to have and find, but were going to be difficult to find and obtain? Like, you know, is there any that stand out to you?
Grail. If we're going through the first like non-variant, so like the one of every game path, the only real grail at that time for that would have been the Elemental Gabriel Assassin's case. Which, for those that don't know, is basically there were about 40-ish of them made. It's a custom aluminum case with the Elemental Gearbolt logo on them. And then inside is just a retail copy of Elemental Gearbolt. And then a gold painted / plated a gun con, and then a memory card. The memory card was either gold painted or red based on what tier you're on, because some of the memory cards came back not good enough for them to give away, so they slapped the red cards in as a stand-in to match the buttons. That I remember trying to hunt one down, and I finally snagged one from someone for, at the time, was $550. And I remember thinking, oh my god, why did I spend this much money, blah blah blah. And then discovered that it was a variant, which made me laugh. And it was such a good feeling, especially since it had the paperwork with it that talks about how you shouldn't handle the gun if you sweat a lot, things like that. More for the provenance than the actual item itself. As far as the like holy grails, that didn't come until the variant collecting. And a lot of my grails are either bizarre or like, are you mental? Like, a bizarre one would be, I finally tracked down a copy of Final Fantasy Tactics Greatest Hits that literally only works in a modded PlayStation, which means Sony, who did everything they could to stop piracy, basically published an official bootleg. That's hysterical. And then another one would have been the Toys R Us Tekken 2 variant, because it came with a little mini guide that was shrink wrapped to the back, except there was an extra sheet of paper on top of the instruction manual that acted as the barcode and back image thing. Almost everyone threw out that sheet of paper, and I've only seen/known of at least 3 copies, including mine, that actually do have that back insert with. That was like a 2-year journey to find.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a lot more on the variants or the obscure weird stuff than the actual normal library.
Well, I know you have other console games and everything as well, too. You mentioned getting into like the Japanese games as well. Is the goal to have a complete Japanese set as well? Like,
yeah, because I'm an idiot.
So then from there, you know, PAL and just worldwide?
No. I draw the line at PAL.
Okay.
Like, Japan's bad enough because, like, where America had the greatest hits, Japan has, like, the greatest hit series of the greatest hit series that was part of a greatest hit series. Where PAL, because of all the different language for the countries, you can literally have, like, 10 variants of the same game just because of the language on the disc. Like, that's where I draw the line.
That's going to be a fun journey then. Yeah, why do you think the PlayStation stuck with you? Why do you think this was that console for you? Like, was it time, place? You know, was it just the combination of some of the games and the moment you were in life and everything? Like, what do you think it is about the PlayStation that just resonates with you?
I think it was a kind of trifecta. One, I would have been... Oh my God, I have to do math. Wait a minute. 95. So I would have been 19 when it first came out, so 20 when I bought it. And, you know, 18 to 25 is like your most impressionable imprinted years as far as adulthood and like what your true tastes and things are, stuff like that. And I was a huge, huge arcade guy. Like, I loved the beat 'em ups, the Street Fighters and Mortal Kombats. And that was a lot of the early software for the PlayStation were arcade ports, especially from Namco with like Soul Blade and Tekken and all the good stuff. But more so, the second part of the trifecta would be that I got my job at Game Shark. So, like, you know, my work day would be I walk into work and my editor-in-chief would just literally come over with a stack of PlayStation games. They come and said, here, you're reviewing these or, you know, what have you, so play through them. So I was forced to actually play things I wasn't used to, like, you know, explore, like try and figure out how to make me enjoy something I shouldn't normally enjoy because I'm not used to it. And then the third of that triangle was because during that time, with how cheap it was to print a CD and ship it, and most dev teams, unless you were Final Fantasy, were like 10 people at most, companies could explore, and it was the Wild West of game development. And I make this joke all the time, I think even in the book, where it was so crazy, Squaresoft was making baseball games and fighting games. Like, that's how insane it was. And especially now that I'm getting into the Japanese libraries, there are so many little things that I missed the first time around that just continued that trend of the Wild West. Like, I'm currently playing a game called Internal Section, which is essentially like Nanotech Warrior or Tempest, but you can throw in a music CD, and while that music plays, the game will change something in the level to match and mimic the song you're playing currently. Kind of like Monster Rancher, and it's just really, really good, and it's really, really fun. But yeah, it's this never-ending font of just fresh content and fresh ideas. And I say that making the joke of from a friend of mine that, like, yeah, the white man should, no white man should own this many pachinko games and dating simulators he can't read. But it's gonna be a fun time, and it's pretty much my 25-year project from here on out to just explore as much as I can before I leave this mortal coil with this system. Mm. So should be fun.
Well, that's a journey you're on. It should be entertaining. I mean, obviously you wouldn't do it unless you didn't love it. So thanks for sharing your console story then. So we did it. That's the episode. I will put the links to like your site and YouTube channel and everything in the show notes below. Social media tags, you know, we can throw down there as well. But anything else you maybe want to plug before we wrap up here then, Jason?
No, just PlayStationLibrary.com and GameRave TV, all one word, on YouTube. Come hang out. They even got a Discord. It's all good.
Oh, yeah, the Discord as well. Yeah. Grand. Well, we will have you on a future episode that we may or may not be recording right after this episode. So thank you, Jason. We'll talk to you soon.
Laters.